So as I said, it was good to see Marty Walsh out on the picket line there in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, marching with the striking Kellogg's workers. And look, this administration, as many have said, has been the most pro-union in many of our lifetimes. I would like to see them a little more. I would like to see a little more action. But the question is, how far can you go? I'm here to share some thoughts on that line. I've asked Rebecca Rainey to come talk with us. She's the employment and immigration reporter over at Politico Pro. She's got a piece out today. Biden walks line between appeasing unions, bosses amid wave of strikes. Rebecca, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I'm looking at this moment as, you know, as a labor guy going, hey, there's some pretty good press happening around the strikes that are happening. There's a sense of militancy within the labor movement that I haven't seen in a number of years. It'd be nice if we had laws that back some of that up. But, you know, Biden, to me, has been one of the most pro-union presidents, at least of my lifetime. But he does have a tough line to walk, doesn't he?
Yes, that's very true. And I think you're right. You know, Joe Biden has campaigned on and honestly, from the actions that he can take from the executive branch, has really delivered on being one of the most pro-labor presidents we've seen in modern history, for sure. However, you know, some of those broader labor reforms that you're talking about, you know, things like Democrats Protecting the Right to Organize Act, things that would make it much easier for workers to join together in unions, seem to have a much, you know, more difficult path forward on Capitol Hill, just given, you know, the narrow margins. The same things that are holding up the infrastructure package right now. You know, you see even moderate Democrats, you know, dumbing up that process. It's the same thing with labor reform. You know, people are a little frightened of upsetting the business community, you could say, in the simplest terms.
No, absolutely, because they could literally crash our economy. And, you know, you look at what's going on, you know, they're used to being in control. And if they don't get their way, who knows what comes out of this, what disinvestment comes. And I look, you know, today I'm infuriated at this judge down in Alabama who has basically shut off picketing at this Warrior Met Coal because this is what corporate America can do. This is the kind of power that they're now ready, willing, and used to wielding.
And, you know, during, you know, what we've been seeing, all this movement, all of this strike activity and worker militancy we've been seeing this month, you know, which has been dubbed on social media as Striketober, I think really comes at a time where, you know, we've been dealing with this pandemic for almost 2 years now. And you look at the jobs that are out there, even just for average people, and $15, even as a starting wage, and that's high for a lot of places, just doesn't seem like enough.
Nope.
So it makes sense why workers right now, you know, you mentioned Warrior Met Coal, what we're seeing at John Deere, Kellogg's. The fact that companies are considering cutting benefits and reducing wages right now seems like a slap in the face, considering that we've gotten through, you know, nearly 24 months of this completely new world that the pandemic has created. So I think that is really what's driving people to use the leverage that they legally have. You know, striking is a legally protected right under the National Labor Relations Act. I always love to remind people that, you know, bargaining for your working conditions is legally protected. So I think people are starting to really kind of fall back into places where, you know, people, you know, using these measures and walking out of the job and taking riskier moves to, you know, really say, hey, we're not going to deal with this anymore in the workplace.
Yeah, for now, all of that is protected. I mean, the reality is I look at this decision by this judge in Alabama to shut that picket line down. You know, we used to have the right to strike, and we'll see how this plays out in the coming days. But to your point about, you know, during the pandemic, you know, I was on the picket line today in Lancaster, you know, with the striking Kellogg workers. And, you know, they kept telling the same story. You know, during the pandemic, you know, we were essential. We were heroes. We were feeding America. We were patriotic. You know, granted, we were putting our lives and our families' lives at risk while working, you know, excessive overtime. But they told us we were all these things, and yet, You know, we simply want equality in the workplace. We want to close the two-tier wage system so that the people coming in can enjoy the standard of living that we had. And, oh, by the way, maybe they'll stay so I don't get stuck working, you know, mandatory overtime every day, too. It seems like they just want a better life-work balance and better for workers of the future, which I don't think is a bad thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, people, this disruption that we saw from the pandemic, you know, we're not supposed to use this word in journalism, unprecedented, but it literally, for every, across industries, really just disrupted the labor market. And for some people, they didn't have the security that they did. It makes sense that people are willing to put their jobs at risk, because that's what the reality is when it comes to a strike, to say, hey, we need more security at work. We are worth more than this. Especially just after, again, the past 24 months that we've had, you know, with so many people either literally dying. We've lost, again, 600,000 people. I've had a lot of economists point, you know, when we talk about the labor shortage, we've lost 600,000 people in the United States. Now, granted, some of those are children, elderly people who weren't in the labor market, but that is a huge, huge piece of the labor force.
Yeah, last I checked, it was like 760,000.
Yes. Yes, it's probably higher at this point. I'm sorry, I haven't checked in a minute, but exactly. And, you know, the dynamic and risks that are happening in the workplace and that, you know, the everyday worker now has to deal with really make, you know, wages worth less than they were prior to this pandemic. It, you know, going back to your point about some of these people who were on strike who were called, you know, heroes earlier on in this pandemic, things haven't changed. We're still in the throes of the Delta virus. And it's wild to me that companies can say, okay, you're worth an extra $5 now because you're putting your life at risk. But now that things have calmed down a little bit, we have some solutions. You're not worth as much anymore because we can give you a mask and make sure you have a vaccine and it's less risky for us. And, you know, I don't think that's enough for people anymore.
No, I think there has been an awakening on a certain level. But, you know, here's the thing. We hear the Striketober stuff on, especially on social media. We see in media reports how, you know, strike militancy and strike activity is up. Is it really up given past years? Because I've actually sat down and, you know, started to think about this because I was going along too. Wow, there are a lot of big strikes going on. There's a lot of publicity, a lot of news coverage right now. And my mindset is I'm in this spot where going, you know, I don't know that it was as much as it's been in past years. It's just that we're now paying attention to it more. And my fear is, the other side of this, is that, you know, come, you know, the next couple of months down the road, when you can't get your stuff, you know, at Christmas time, the script gets flipped and goes, you know, wow, it's those greedy workers. They're the reason you can't get anything. You know, it was their fault. They didn't go to work. I just see so many weird things coming in the future of this. But to the first question, are there more strikes now than there were in the past?
Now, yeah, you're so right with all the things you just said. No, the answer really is we are seeing, you know, a below average year when it comes to strike activity. And granted, there's some things we need to think about here. Last year with the coronavirus, we saw mass layoffs. Some people just didn't even have jobs that, you know, one of the unions that I work with a lot, Unite Here, which represents hospitality workers, 90% of their members were laid off during the pandemic. So there was a lot of workers who just literally didn't have, you know, their job to leverage again, basically. So this year we are seeing a lot more activity now that the labor market has tightened up. People are reopening their businesses. They want workers. But again, we're talking about, workers are expecting a lot more from their workplace given the risks that the pandemic kind of unveiled. So this whole Striketober thing, the way I like to kind of describe it is a groundswell. It's kind of, you know, it is not historical in size, but it is historical in just the, you know, sheer amount of things happening all at once. And I definitely think it's catching people's attention, as you mentioned, right ahead of the holiday season, because workers, again, are using this unique time as, you know, regarding, you know, the need for more workers to help deal with the increases in demand that come from the holiday season, and workers knowing that and using that to help in, I guess, our, you know, boosting their argument here for getting, right, you know, better working conditions.
That, and this is when their contracts came up, and this is the time that you got to do something. And as I say, strikes are the last arrow in the quiver. Nobody wants to do it. And the fact that people I talked to on the picket line today at Kellogg's, they don't want to be on strike. They want to be able to go to work, but they don't want to work under the conditions that they've been working under for the last several years. And they certainly don't want to have the two-tier wage system. So they now is the time that they have to right this ship. Now, what we're seeing is a lot of activity in the unionized part of things. The other part that I've been saying is we've been seeing a lot of people who've had enough. And the fact that we've only got 10% union density and 6.4% in the private sector, we've now got the great resignation, Rebecca. The great resignation should be all of those strikes that aren't happening. If all of those workers had the ability to go on strike and to bargain collectively in their workplace, maybe they wouldn't be quitting. Maybe they'd be striking.
That's a really, really interesting way to put it. And you're right. Labor laws in the United States haven't been updated for decades. And the last time they were updated, they were updated to make it harder for people to unionize and to police unions and put limits on how people organize. So I think it's a really unique time because, you know, people really were put through the ringer this past year, 2 years. They really, you know, people literally were putting their lives at risk and their families at risk because you didn't know what you were bringing home. And some people didn't have the choice. You know, I was lucky enough to be able to work from home during the pandemic because I'm a journalist. But some people literally have to make the choice every day. And whether they were going to, you know, be potentially exposed to the virus every day. And so, again, I think you're right. If labor laws were different, I think people would be using their leverage in a different way. You're right. We wouldn't be seeing it in quits. We'd be seeing it more again in this kind of worker militancy.
Yeah, at least that's my view on it. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Rebecca Rainey. She's the employment and immigration reporter over at Politico Pro. You can check out her work. We'll get links out on social media. You can also follow her at Rebecca A. Rainey on Twitter. We'll make sure that folks do that as well. Now, you know, I look at this moment, and look, Joe Biden wasn't my first choice. But I think he was a good choice. I like Joe Biden. I think he is a good union guy. I think he wants to do the right thing. But clearly, I don't know that he has much power in these moments. What do you think the expectations should be from people going? Because we're going to hear you know, the attacks against him. So he's not doing anything. How much can he do, do you think?
You know, that's really the point that the White House is kind of making, and the fact that Joe Biden is staying out of this. You know, they also argue this is really up to the workers. You know, maybe if the workers don't fully support a union, maybe the union isn't the best decision for that workplace. They've really, really honed in on the fact that it is, you know, the workers in that workplace's right to choose whether they want to form a union. So, you know, again, it does really vary issue by issue, or in workplace by workplace. But when we look back to what Joe Biden did in the Bessemer, Alabama Amazon union drive, he still reminded workers that they had the right to form a union, that they had the right to vote, to participate in this process, and collectively bargain if they wanted to.
Right.
And, you know, if you are truly, purely, you know, reading the National Labor Relations Act, it does say, it talks about workers' freedom to, you know, join a union or not join a union. So he is kind of being a purist in that sense, and, you know, saying, hey, go out there and exercise your right to vote, whether or not you support the union. By the way, unions tend to, you know, have higher wages, safer workplaces, and when you look at the data, it shows that, you know, unionized workplaces have less layoffs than non-unionized workplaces during the pandemic. So, you know, He does kind of like, it's almost like a quasi-endorsement. He's like, exercise your right to join a union. By the way, there's all these benefits that could come from it, but it's up to you. Which, is honestly the most pro-labor stance a president has taken in modern history.
No, no, absolutely. I'm right there with you. But ultimately, you know, saying that is one thing. And you know, the other part of it is you know, I would love to believe that's possible in this country. But having been a part of numerous organizing drives over the years and seeing what employers get away with, you know, there's part of me that goes, I think I would like some law changes to stop some of the real egregious stuff, like the stuff we saw during the Amazon campaign of all the captive audience meetings, all of the, you know, the plastering the bathrooms with anti-union messaging, the, you know, just, you know, bringing the ballot box into the facility and having the postal service drop a box in there and training cameras on it so they can follow you. I mean, I think we should be looking at that stuff too. And this is where I'm hoping that Marty Walsh and the NLRB and the administration does something.
Yeah. And you know, again, the PRO Act, which would ban a lot of these things that we're talking about, and some, you know, something that you mentioned, I just want to bring up, the whole mailbox issue is the subject of an NLRB unfair labor practice complaint right now that may be overturning that unsuccessful union election there. So that may have been illegal activity, but the PRO Act also would ban, you know, things that you talked about, you know, that those captive audience meetings, forcing workers to go to anti-union meetings during their working hours, things like that. So if Democrats were able to pass this labor overhaul legislation, we would see some big changes. It would also allow for things like secondary pickets, which means it would make it a lot easier for workers to strike. We could see more strike activity like we are seeing during this, you know, Striketober action.
Yep. No, I'm all in favor of it.
Yeah, but, you know, the reality is I think we're going to see the most changes from the National Labor Relations Board. You know, President Joe Biden has put in a lot of, you know, very, very close union allies in those positions. I wrote about this a few months ago. That actually may get them in trouble, some of their affiliations with, you know, the SEIU and the Fight for 15 issue they're dealing with McDonald's. A lot of these, you know, members were very close in that effort or even represented the SEIU in those cases. So that may be a place for hiccups, but, you know, for people who are watching the labor movement, the NLRB, I think, is going to really be the place that we see consistent changes. And while those changes are going to happen on a case-by-case basis, you know, little strokes fell great oaks.
Yeah, there you go. Good stuff. And I'd love to have you come back and share some thoughts on that in the coming weeks and months. Rebecca, I appreciate the time. Great stuff. I hope folks will take a look at the article. We'll get links out on social media. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Fantastic. Rebecca Rainey, employment and immigration reporter there at Politico Pro. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.